Welcome into Diamonds in the Desert. I'm Haley Stasiak with Jordan Hamm. Diamondbacks are back from the All-Star break. We're in the east side of the country. I'm going to start that over.
It's live.
In the east side of the country. Where were they last weekend?
Atlanta. Yes. Hotlanta.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Welcome into Diamonds in the Desert. I'm Haley Stasiak with Jordan Hamm. We're back from the All-Star break. Diamondbacks are getting off to a somewhat slow start after losing the entire series to the Braves last weekend. This week, they're at the Reds, and they come home for a homestand against the Nationals and the Braves. What, Jordan, are we seeing with this team as they've come back and are getting things revamped for the second half of the season? For me, it's the bullpen, but what else with you?
I think two key factors in the lineup to keep an eye on. Really, no one's really hitting particularly well with the exception of Paul Goldschmidt and Daniel Descalso when he's in there. But Jake Lamb, AJ Pollock, those are two guys that have really struggled. Entering today, Jake Lamb is 2-for-22 his last two series. And that's with the All-Star break in between there. And then AJ Pollock, 2-for-11 this past week. So both guys at the top of the lineup, Jake Lamb's in that run-producing spot, AJ Pollock's up at the top of the lineup. Both of those guys are really struggling. So when Paul Goldschmidt is hitting, there's not many guys on base. So those are two guys that have really struggled recently. The Diamondbacks' offense has really dropped off. I point to those two guys. You know, if they can certainly turn it around, I think that jumpstarts things quite a bit. But also, as you mentioned, the bullpen has not been as strong as it has been all year.
I mean, over in Atlanta, Archie Bradley was not Archie Bradley in his when he came out of the bullpen that series. He gave up two runs on four hits, and that's very uncharacteristic of him. And then you've got Ruby De La Rosa on the DL with right shoulder inflammation, and Delgado's also on the DL. So you've got two key components of that bullpen out, and then your other very key component not performing up to standards there.
Right. Archie Bradley's been virtually unhittable all year. Delgado had one of the worst performances of really probably the past 2 years, his last game before he got moved to the DL. So this is part of baseball. You know, it's a long season. That's why they have tried to create as much depth as they have with this bullpen specifically, and brought up the Braden Shipleys of the world, and even, you know, Zach Godley before he really cemented himself as a starter, he was coming up and down quite a bit as well. So that's something we'll have to keep an eye out for. Entering the All-Star break, I think many people would have said the shakiest portion of the bullpen would be Fernando Rodney. The guys getting the ball to Rodney now are quite shaky as well.
Right.
So, again, if they want to stop this free fall, they're going to have to do what they've done all year and shorten that game. Torey Lovello asks for 21 outs from his starters and lets the bullpen take it over from there. And in a lot of cases, the starters haven't been able to make it. They might have gotten the 18 or the 17 outs, but the bullpen's been able to carry that load, specifically in the 6th, 7th, 8th. They've just been so good. So something definitely to look out for.
On that topic of the starting rotation, obviously right now at this moment, they're leaning on Robbie Ray and Zach Greinke. For me, something's got to give with Patrick Corbin there. There's just, I mean, he has his days where he's doing all right, but it's not the Robbie Ray, the Zach Greinke. Even Taiwan Walker's doing pretty well, and Zach Godley as well. And so I think something with Corbin's got to give there, and that rotation needs to help round itself out. And on the topic of all this stuff, we are easing back in. They did get their break. It's not necessarily an excuse, but you do have to take that into consideration. Hopefully things will start giving with this Cincinnati Reds series this week and then coming home and kind of getting readjusted with that. But other than that, who is your guy that in the starting rotation you think they need to be leaning on?
I think Taiwan Walker has shown those glimpses. I think Zach Greinke has proven time and again he's the guy that can stop the bleeding. The only problem with this stretch is he's the only one winning games right now. Robbie Ray even had a few hiccups here and there. So certainly you're leaning on those two, but Taiwan Walker, when you can have a solid three, not even a great solid three, just or a great three, but a solid top three, that just does wonders for you. And for the most part, Zach Godley's been very good. He got beat up a little bit on Sunday. We'll see how he responds to that. But with Taiwan Walker, he's a guy that I think coming into the All-Star break, he had a pretty bad start against Cincinnati, got beat up a little bit. And he said emotionally, it's because it started from the top with Billy Hamilton. Mm-hmm. He thought he had strike three. They called it a ball. Billy Hamilton got on. The wheels kind of fell off from there, and they scored multiple runs. So he's an emotional guy. He's a young guy. I think people forget that. He is a young guy, but he's logged a lot of major league time. So people think he might be a little bit older than that. But since he is a young veteran, I think he's able to kind of put those emotions behind him. You know, it's not going to just be Zach Greinke that's going to get them out of this hole. He's one of five. So if you can get a Robbie Ray to bounce back, which I think he will, if you can get Taiwan Walker to right that ship and really not let this snowball, then I think they'll be able to pull themselves out of this.
And one of those things with Walker is he's very candid about how he's out there and his emotions when he's out there. And I spoke with him prior to the season beginning. We did a story on his relationship with Grand Canyon pitching coach Rich Dorman. He's candid about that, and he's open, and he knows where he needs to work on things, and he knows that it's not always going to be sunshine and rainbows out there. He's not always going to be on point every single outing. So I think that's another great thing about his style of play and when he's out there on the mound. But moving in a little bit, let's talk about some of that All-Star stuff. We're going to get to the second half and some of the scheduling stuff. But did you have any takeaways from the All-Star break in the game?
That it's fun just to see so much talent on one field together. And, you know, so many people say that baseball has a star problem where they don't properly show off their stars. I think the All-Star game is a perfect time for that, where you can see a little bit of the personality, see kind of those crazy lineups where you have Nolan Arenado and then Bryce Harper and then Paul Goldschmidt. Like the talent on the field, when you put it together collectively, is pretty incredible. And I think it's a great opportunity for a guy like Charlie Blackmon, who has been killing it for multiple years, but isn't necessarily your national name.
Not really regarded,
You know, a lot of people might know him for his hairstyles more than his style of play, but this guy is a monster, and he's been productive for multiple years. So a great opportunity for all-stars like that to get that recognition. And in the case of Jake Lamb and Robbie Ray, I don't think this is going to be the last all-star game for these guys. So definitely cool to see a couple of guys who have been there a couple of times in Greinke and Goldschmidt paired with two first-time all-stars.
And we can't pass up this opportunity to mention Cody Bellinger, and his performance in that home run derby. I was up in the air, 30,000 feet, watching it. Thanks Southwest Air for streaming live TV. I was coming back from Indiana, and there was a guy behind me on the plane watching it, and he was just making his reactions to that entire round were just unbelievable. It was funny, but he did a great job with that, and cool moment for his dad.
It's one of those things where you kind of stop getting surprised at the amazing things that he does because he's so consistent. It's kind of the same thing. I've heard players say that about Paul Goldschmidt, where he'll hit 315 every year and have his, you know, 25 plus home runs and 100 plus RBIs. And it's kind of like, well, that becomes the standard. So you kind of overlook when he has a 2-for-4 game with two RBIs and things like that, when that's a pretty darn good day for everybody else.
And you can't forget that we mentioned, coming out of the All-Star break, having to kind of readjust. He came out and hit for the cycle. So there was no readjusting.
Right. And there's so much that people talk about of, you know, the home run derby will mess with your swing. He's hitting 450.
He was having fun out there.
Coming out of the break. So that might be the case maybe if you're in Little League adjusting your swing. But it's incredible what he's been able to do and put together. And, you know, on the other side of the country and in the other league, you have Aaron Judge doing similar things. So pretty cool to see the young stars. While we're on the topic of the Dodgers, if they win tonight, they'll be 30-4 since June 16th. The last time that run happened was the 1977 Royals. That's courtesy of Jason Stark.
That's crazy. They're a fun team to watch, too. Like
the Diamondbacks and the Rockies and the Cubs are going to have fun battling out for the wild card. I think it's safe to say the Dodgers are comfortably in their NL West lead.
Let's get into now All-Star break behind us. first half behind us. The second half is rolling. The Diamondbacks are coming into a kind of tumultuous point in the schedule as they get this second half going. They're headed to St. Louis, not this upcoming weekend, but the following weekend, which is going to be another tough one. The Cardinals gave them some trouble when they were here. And then, of course, starting out August, you've got at Wrigley, up in at AT&T, and then you come home and you've got the Dodgers and the Cubs and then the Astros. So you
take two home games against the Astros, then go to Houston, two more at Houston, and then at Minnesota. Basically circle the last week in July and the first couple weeks of August, and then the second week you're going to go from August 8th to August 20th, and you're going to get a great snapshot of where this team is at. What if they're able to come away and pick up some ground on the Dodgers and further add that cushion in the wild card, then this is a team I think that Mike Hazen and the D-backs brass is going to say, okay, let's go get a J.D. Martinez. Let's go get a Brad Hand in the bullpen. Let's go maybe try to shop for another arm.
Mm-hmm.
If things don't go that way, they might be selling Yasmani Tomas. They might be taking calls on Zach Greinke or making calls on Zach Greinke. I think that those two spurts are going to define the 2017 season.
What is it most about this stretch? I mean, coming up with the Nationals, the Braves, obviously the Braves gave them some trouble. Nationals could potentially give them some trouble. It'll be interesting to see how this Reds series turns out, too. Hopefully, with the way the Diamondbacks have kind of been turning things around that first half, hopefully that comes up for this second half. But between now and that third, fourth week in August, what is it that you're most looking forward to seeing series-wise?
Like in terms of opponent or in terms of just out of the Diamondbacks?
Both.
In terms of opponent, I'm always interested to see a Bryce Harper type and what he does, specifically against a Robbie Ray, against a Zach Greinke, against an Archie Bradley. Archie's never backed down when facing big guys. And this year, honestly, more often than not, he's struck them out. So he's been pretty great. So it'll be great to see that. Also interested to see how I think it'll be nothing but glowing, applause and things like that. But Ender Inciarte returning to the Diamondbacks, he was a fan favorite, kind of under the radar in that trade for Shelby Miller because of Dansby Swanson. But both of them are going to be taking the field at Chase Field. So getting to see what he does, he absolutely destroyed the Diamondbacks when they were in Atlanta. But seeing that response will be interesting. But the Diamondbacks have been so good at home. Those six games, you're going to need to take at least probably four of them to feel like you're getting yourself off the mat and dusting yourself off.
For me, it's that Astros. They're August 14th and 15th, the Astros being here, and then heading to Houston for those two games on the 16th and 17th. The Astros are another fun team to watch. And obviously, when the Dodgers come to town, when the Cubs come to town, always going to be a show, whatever. But Houston's been that team this year that's kind of been like, oh, they're good, but oh, look at the Dodgers kind of thing. So I think that'll be exciting to see that.
And now that we're looking at it, the two clubs that show up the most at Chase Field when their team is coming in are the Dodgers and the Cubs. Now, with the new ticket packages and with the upped attendance for the Diamondbacks, we'll see what the ratio will be when they come in. And a lot of it's going to have to do with the Diamondbacks are able to get their business done at Wrigley Field and at AT&T. But for many years, my father would say there's too much blue in Chase Field when the Dodgers or the Cubs come to town. So we'll see what that ratio is going to be. That it's one of their best years in terms of attendance and in terms of productivity. So we'll see how they shake that out come August 8th.
I think that's an interesting point too. I'm from the Midwest. I grew up watching the Cubs, and coming out here and seeing spring training, all this, it's rare that you don't run into somebody who's like, oh, yeah, I'm a Cubs fan or this and that. And it's basically like Cubs fans just kind of pick themselves up and place
Wrigley
themselves
West
here. Yes.
Yeah.
But when I was out there for the Cardinals series when they were out here, it was very much a lot of St. Louis fans as well. So you've got, it's just the Midwest picks up and comes out here. I mean, what's not to love about Arizona? So this week we've got a minor leaguer of the week. It's going to Dalton Varsho up in Hillsboro. He's up there with the Hops in short season. He is currently batting at .375 with only 9 strikeouts, and he's got 27 hits, 10 runs, 7 doubles, 2 triples, and 2 home runs with 19 RBIs. Just killing it up there in Hillsboro, leading the team in average.
Yeah, and the Diamondbacks coming off their first draft, this new regime with Mike Hazen leading the charge, and Derek Ladner has been with the team for quite a few years, but one of the directors, he made it a point with this draft to say that they're going for experienced college guys, and Varsho definitely one of those guys, the competitive balance pick. So a guy that really has hit the ground running, and I think that's the positive of taking those types of guys. They're a little bit more developed, a little bit more further along, and that sort of thing. So they're hoping that he can move up the ranks quickly.
And he did make a point saying that, yeah, he's a catcher, but he was brought on for his bat. Really like his bat there. And it's just amazing that he's gone up. I mean, all three of the Diamondbacks' top three picks are doing great. Drew Ellis out of Louisville, Paven Smith out of Virginia, they're doing great too. So very exciting stuff going on up there with this year's draft picks in Hillsboro. That's what we've got for you this week on Diamonds in the Desert. Be sure to check out sports360az.com for more of our baseball content at the pro level, the college level, and the high school level. Thanks for listening in.